All right, ladies, buckle up.
It's showtime. It's showtime.
It's showtime.
It's showtime.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the 55th episode of Matinee Talk. I am one of your hosts, Johnny Lightfoot, with me as always,
Julian Owens.
How are you doing today, Julian?
Just coming back from the road. Just a little tired, but I think I'll manage. How about you?
Same, man. Got over the weather and then literally just went to visit family and then came back.
Exactly the same. So, yes, exactly the same.
All right. Without further ado, we did have a box office, however small, this weekend. You want to kind of dive into what we had at the box office?
Absolutely. Let's talk about it. So, top five movies at the box office this past weekend. Number one is Focus Features Come Play, which is a very interesting movie. It's a brand new movie about a kid who has like an imaginary friend that becomes a little demonic. I think it's cool. It earned $3.15 million this past weekend. Honest Thief came in at number two with $1.35 million, bringing its domestic total up to $9.5 million.
All right.
The War with Grandpa, its second week, only got $1 million this weekend, bringing its domestic total up to $11.2 million. Number four was Tenet, bringing in, wow, only $885,000, bringing its domestic total to $53.8 million. Wow. And The Empty Man, it got in $561,000, bringing its domestic total up to $2.2 million. Wow.
I mean, just sadness all around for box offices right now. I hope we recover, but I mean, we'll go into some news here in a little later about some stuff going on with another big movie, and
which is mind blowing.
We're trying to figure that out. Real quick, because we haven't had any decent Blu-ray releases to talk about in quite a time. So, coming out this week, the week of November 3rd, V for Vendetta coming out on 4K finally. It'll be coming out. I don't know if it's an exclusive, but there are a few different exclusive versions. Obviously, the 5th of November, right? Yes. Around the corner. Remember the 5th of November.
I can't wait for that. Yeah. Can't wait.
Also, another huge one, HBO's Game of Thrones, the complete series coming out on 4K disc. And gosh, it's a massive collection.
I was about to say, how much is that collection, I wonder? It's like, what, 250?
It's gotta be. Because okay. When I bought my Blu-rays, it was close to that.
That's what I figured. Okay.
Also coming out with a new 4K release is Kick-Ass. The first one, which I really, really enjoy, Kick-Ass. Rounding it out for this week's releases, we have Antebellum, the very little watched film that caught on VOD a couple weeks, not even a month ago, and it's already hitting discs. So craziness there. For next week, we've got one release with Bill and Ted Face the Music coming out on actual disc. It's been out on VOD for a little while, but for those of you like me who collect discs, it will be available now.
It's only been out, it's been streaming for what, 2 months? Two and a half months?
2 or 3 months. Yeah, man. The theaters and the studios are coming to these deals where they're shortening the theatrical runs.
Yes. And again, we'll talk about the theatrical runs and what we're going to do about that later. But with that being said, unfortunately, we do have a couple of sad news options to talk about, you guys. On October 31st, on Halloween, Sean Connery passed away in his sleep in his trip to the Bahamas with his son. I mean, he has retired from acting way in the early to mid-2000s, but his contribution to the films has been something
different.
His
catalog is huge.
Ridiculously huge.
The first James Bond.
Right. We have James Bond. We have him playing Indiana Jones' father, Indiana Jones, in The Last Crusade. We're talking,
Hunt for Red October, yes. The Rock. There's so many out there. And he will be missed. And I mean, 90 years young. So, I mean, he definitely lived a full life.
Yes, I'll absolutely say
that. And the fact that he had the wherewithal to retire from acting early.
Yes.
So he could go spend some time with his family and go take some trips and do some stuff. I think all the better for him, and thoughts and prayers to family and friends of the late great
Sean Connery.
Yeah. Another unfortunate passing. We have Oscar-nominated producer Charles Gordon. He produced several huge films. So obviously leading the pack is Field of Dreams, also Die Hard, October Sky, and Waterworld. Unfortunately passed of cancer in Los Angeles. His one Oscar nomination, which he got with his brother and producing partner, was on Field of Dreams.
Yep.
So again, thoughts and prayers to the Gordon family. Yeah. With all of that, let's get into some news. Julian, what do we have with in terms of news about another big blockbuster? Speaking of Sean Connery being the first Bond, what's up with Bond?
So MGM is shopping, and I mean aggressively shopping, No Time to Die. It came out about a couple of days, like a week ago, I would say about a week ago, that MGM is losing millions of dollars as this movie is progressively not being in theaters. So they were throwing it to the streaming powers that be and asked if one of them would pick it up. And, you know, the two that came up to mind was Netflix and Apple TV. There you go. Mm-hmm. Are the two that basically are fighting for it. However, nobody made an offer yet because MGM has stated that they want $600 million for the rights and distribution rights for No Time to Die. I mean, me personally, that's a lot of money. And whoever decides to pick up that bill would save not only MGM, but it would kind of depict where movies are going to go for the next foreseeable future. Do I think either one of those companies are going to get $600 million to go purchase James Bond? I likely don't believe so, but it's a pretty nice, interesting thing that this is what they're trying to do with No Time to Die since of everything that's going on.
I mean, I just want to see the film.
I agree.
I don't care who releases it, what platform. I don't care if two companies come together and are like, hey, we'll just split the profits. Like,
right.
You put in 300, I'll put in 300, and then we'll keep it on VOD for like 3 months.
3 months, yes.
And then we'll put it on both of our streaming platforms.
Right. And that's what I feel like would be the smart decision to do because, I mean, let's think about it. Netflix being the streaming platform of the number one streaming platform, but they're boosting their number. They're boosting the prices for you to use their platform just recently, and they're going to do that for effective to everybody who's a user. Side note: yes, Netflix will be upping their prices. If you have the standard, like the $10 one, you won't be affected. If you have the mid tier, which was like $12 or $13, you're going to get a dollar up. For Johnny and I, because I believe Johnny has the 4K.
I have the 4K, and then I'm still on my like year.
See, so for me, it would affect me then, because then for all those who does the 4K monthly, we're getting $2 added per month, and I feel like that's them basically saying, hey, so we could try to cut down from this deficit bubble that we have. Yep. We need to raise our prices. I don't think Netflix has the money and the means to just shark out $600 million.
No, not at all.
So that's why I think that it will be, like you said, I would see if Hulu or Netflix were to join together and do this, mm-hmm. and both of them put in $300 million and they both have it on a streaming platform for like a month or two. I wouldn't say that long, for a month or two, and then let MGM do the DVD release, which I think would be smart. But
And if you pay $600 million, you still get it. A little piece
of the pie, exactly. Which will be interesting to see how MGM is going to do this. But yeah, lowballing, they said 600, but highest that they're looking between $600 million and $850 million. I don't know anybody's going to pick up that bill,
but
you know, to each his own. To each his own.
No, not at all. With that being said, obviously not a lot going on in theaters.
No.
But the two of us have both seen films recently, so we're going to do non-spoiler talks. Neither of us have seen the other person's films, but we're just going to go right into it. Julian, what have you seen lately? Tell me a little bit about it and why I should or shouldn't see it.
So the two movies that I've watched this weekend was On the Rocks and Ben Whitley's Rebecca. I will talk about Ben Whitley's Rebecca because I feel like that's a little easier to deal with, but then we'll get into On the Rocks. Ben Whitley's Rebecca is basically another adaptation of the novel Rebecca. And for those who haven't seen this film, it is a remake of the 1940 version that Alfred Hitchcock made. Lily James and Armie Hammer. Lily is the one who plays Cinderella in the remake, and Armie Hammer, who's played in some really good movies. Call Me By Your Name is one of my favorites of his. And it basically talks about this woman who basically falls in love and gets married to this recent widower and basically moves into his house in the Manderley, which is the name of the house. And things start to unravel about his past and his relationship with his previous wife, which her name was Rebecca. Fortunately, I don't want to spoil the movie for you just because, you know, if you haven't watched it yet or if you haven't seen the 1940 Alfred Hitchcock, you know what I'm talking about. But for me, Johnny, the issue with this movie is it tries to add something new to this IP, but also at the same time took the thriller out of it, right? And I was telling this to my mom when I went home this weekend. You would think that the master of suspense, Alfred Hitchcock, showed you a roadmap to make a suspenseful movie about a novel that he, like, thrilled about in his first American film debut, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you would assume that somebody would just take it and be like, okay, let me add a little bit. Yeah,
say what you will about the Gus Van Sant Psycho,
yes,
but at least he just took the best parts of the original and he just basically redid it.
And that's what I enjoyed about that version of Psycho. But with Ben, he literally took the greatest moments of this movie and just, like, didn't do anything with them. Mm. So he gave you more backstory on Mrs. De Winter, that's what her name is, and just gave you a little bit of, like, what you call it? A little backstory about what she was going through. And then now when she finally meets Armie Hammer, who is Maxim De Winter, you're like, okay, I can kind of get it. But all of the suspense, all of the thrills, like all of the different moments that you would expect from this movie, you don't get. You don't get none of the thrills, none of the suspense. And one thing also, and I hate to say this because these are two beautiful people, it was like watching them grinding sandpaper together on basis of their chemistry. Oh. And again, Lily James, beautiful. Like I said, seeing her in Cinderella, a beautiful woman. And you have Armie Hammer, who is just like this very great stud looking guy. And literally the chemistry just felt like I was sitting there watching paint dry. And it was just bad. And one thing that really made me put it to the rating that I have it is they changed the ending in a sense of, like, not even giving it suspense. So there's two big, huge key plot moments that happen in the film. For those, again, have seen it, I'm not going to spoil those here. They underwhelm it. Very underwhelmingly make these moments subpar. It doesn't really, like, the shock value, right? You're like, oh, wow, that happened? Oh, my goodness. You don't really get that in this film. And then after that bombshell happens, you get to what happens at the end of the film, like the end of the book. Oh, that happened? Okay. And it doesn't give you any...
No payoff.
No.
No, like, yeah, give me some candy.
No, none of that. And the craziest thing is, I forgot his name, and I feel bad that I'm doing this. Rebecca's cousin, who I forgot who they casted him as, he was the best part of this movie. He was absolutely best part of this movie. And I'm just like, okay, all right. I guess we don't care about anything else here. Jack Farvel, who was him? Sam Riley. Yes, okay. Sam Riley. He was the best part of the movie. He was, and everything else was just like, okay, all right. I gave it a 2.5 to be nice after trying to rewatch it again with my mom. I said, yep, this is a 2. Absolute 2. Wouldn't recommend it. So, yeah, that's how I feel about Rebecca. Did you have any thoughts before I go into On the Rocks?
No, I knew I wasn't probably going to see this, and you just confirmed that for me, so I appreciate you saving me some time.
If you need a pad, some movies in your 2020 list to get to 100 or 120 like you want, yes, you can add it to the list, but no, I would not recommend this as something recommending to watch. And then, I don't know if you've watched any bits or pieces of On the Rocks.
No. Wow. The Sofia Coppola. Okay. Yeah, yes. No, I have not. I definitely want to because, I mean, I'm a huge Bill Murray fan. So, and I do like the majority of her film catalog.
So I'm going to say something sacrilegious on the show. And I know all of my cinephiles on here is going to get mad at me. I haven't really watched that many Sofia Coppola films. The one that I've watched bits and pieces of, and I'm sorry I'm saying this, is Lost in Translation. Mm-hmm. And watch a little bit of it, not all of it. So going into this movie, I'm like, okay, we got another rom-com in a sense movie. Cool. Watch this, and I need to go and fully rewatch Lost in Translation. This was a really good movie. Basically, like Johnny said, Bill Murray's in this, Rashida Jones and Marlon Wayans in there. Speaking of which, never would have thought Marlon Wayans and Rashida Jones would work together as a married couple. Let me point that out. The story goes, and this is the premise of this movie, so I'm not really spoiling anything. Rashida Jones' husband is like basically making big breaks in his new job. However, she thinks there's some infidelity that's happening or something that's going on in the relationship for the marriage to start having problems. So she asked her father, who is the Bill Murray, to kind of help her figure out what's going on in her and her husband's marriage. That's the most that I'm going to say about this film. Wow, was I excited.
So, yeah. Like, one question I have is, one of the greatest things about Lost in Translation is, even though it's kind of awkward in moments,
yes,
and like the comedy's kind of like, oh, weird, but at the end of the day, you're like, oh, man, like, I like this. This is cute.
I would say that that's what you get out of this movie. It's not, I'll put it this way, because I remember the ending of Lost Translation. I remember that. It's not as sad. It's mm-hmm. very, it has a poignant moment. It's very streamlined. And what's the word I'm thinking of? You're kind of happy, in a sense, at the end of the movie. I can't explain how you're happy, but you're happy at the end of the movie. Bill Murray is probably, again, the best part of this movie. Bill Murray is being Bill Murray, and he plays this, I'd call him a father that you would get unnecessary information from, and that flirtatious, unnecessary know-it-all.
Unwanted.
Yes, the unwanted know-it-all, but he plays it so damn well. And
nice.
I love certain moments of the movie. I can't spoil it here. But Rashida and Bill Murray's like relationship as they're going throughout this movie tells you everything you need to know about a kind of this father-daughter relationship. And, you know, Marlon Wayans, the way he performs this film, I would say this is spoiler. This is the closest I'm going to get to a spoiler. You feel some type of way about the way he does certain things. But then when you realize what all of it came down to and like all the things that like brought up to this moment, you're like, wow, okay, this is pretty interesting. So for me, I enjoyed this movie, a really great movie. I would say don't go in with any expectations. And it's not saying the movie's bad, the story's bad. It's just don't go in assuming one thing's going to happen, because I feel like, and somebody told me this about most of Sofia's films, you feel like it's going to go one way, then it doesn't go the way that you expect it to. So there's certain things that happen that I was just like, oh, okay, I like that. And yeah, really enjoyed it. I thoroughly watched it. It's definitely going to be watched again before the end of the year. I gave this one, I believe, 4 stars. I believe I gave it a 4. I want to double check myself before I say that. Yep, 4 stars. Really good. Love the performances. Top 15 movie I saw this year. Highly recommend it. It's really good.
Nice. Okay, so I've only really seen one new movie. I've been like really dedicating the month of October to going back and rewatching all the Halloween films, yes, watching a lot of old slashers and B movies. But gosh, it was over a month ago. Alamo put on some pre-sale tickets for their mystery movie for Halloween night, which they said was going to be a brand new film. It was going to be shocking, great. The film ended up being The Dark and the Wicked, which is, if everybody knows the movie The Strangers, it's the writer-director Brian Bertino of The Strangers. And so I will say this, it's another home invasion movie, but in a very different vein, where they have that cat and mouse element. And I think Brett talked about it a little bit on our like armchair fits debate when he was talking about The Strangers cat and mouse game, where did the mouse actually have a chance and the strangers are just playing with them. In this, at no point do you feel like the mouse has a chance.
Okay.
It's a supernatural home invasion.
Okay.
And there's a new catchphrase, and it's, I told you not to come.
Okay.
And so the premise is, there's this old woman and her dying husband, and they basically tell their two grown children, like, don't come. Even though your dad's about to die, don't come visit.
Just don't bother.
Stay away.
Okay.
And of course they ignore it and show up, and some weird stuff goes on, and you see it in the trailer, like the mom ends up doing some weird stuff, and in the trailer they're like, they find the journal and start reading all of this shit she's writing about some weird stuff happening in the middle of the night, and now there's a presence jumping on the front of their boots, on their edge of their bed, and making noises, and is just like waiting for their father to get close enough to death, because that's when I guess he'll taste the best. And he's, you know, he speaks, he torments, and there's some really crazy stuff that happens in here. I will say one thing about the film that I was disappointed in, and maybe it was just because the theater was freezing.
Okay.
And it is a cold movie, even though it takes place in Texas. But it does take a while to like move into it. Like through the,
okay.
it feels longer than it is. The movie in actuality is probably less than 100 minutes. So it's
it's super, 93 minutes.
Yeah. So
okay.
It feels a lot longer, but most of that comes from the first like 15 to 20 minutes, feels more like 30, because it's not exposition for exposition's sake, but it is a lot of people having conversations. You're getting to know this family. You're getting to know like what the lives are that they came from. You're starting to introduce other characters like this priest and a neighbor and like these other characters that are going to become very central later on, but you have to get their introductions and those relationships with the brother and sister established. And there's a lot of weird, twisted imagery in this. And I will say the sound design, and everybody who's seen The Strangers knows how good the sound design in there is, when there's like these quiet moments and then you just have somebody like walk by in the back of the frame and you just make a little bit of a noise. But then all of a sudden, like 5 minutes later, when like you're not expecting something to happen, there's a loud crash, like as a jump scare, but then it's nothing. And it's like, okay, so we're not playing the jump scares just to make the audience jump. You're trying to keep everybody on edge.
On edge.
The whole movie. Okay. Because when you can see something and you're like, I swear I see something right there, that's when nothing happens. And then it's when you're like trying to pay attention and listen, where you get the jolt from the speakers in the theater, but you don't, you still don't necessarily see anything because of this entity.
So it's like, I'll call it like how the first Conjuring successfully did its jump scares, in a sense. It like, it grinded the tension just enough. And then when you felt like you set everything in a frame and you're like, okay, I can breathe, it hits you with something that you're like,
it
wow,
is like,
okay.
It is that kind of sense, except that The Conjuring doesn't necessarily have that feeling of hopelessness.
You're right. I agree with
like,
that. Okay.
He did that with The Strangers. Like in the first 15 minutes of The Strangers, even the trailer for The Strangers, you were like, yeah, no. You, like you watch this trailer and you're just like, oh crap.
They're not going to make it out. Okay.
Nope.
So let me ask this, because I feel like this is something definitely up my alley, but one of the biggest things, and I'm just going to say this, I feel terrible for rewatching Hereditary, because I try to put that in my movie list to watch again this year, and revisiting it, I still am so uncomfortable watching it. But one thing that I will say about Hereditary that kind of bothered me, and I guess this might be your same issue, is Hereditary does the exact same thing. It's slow. It's slow pacing. It's trying to move all the pieces together until the 30-minute mark. And once it hits the 30-minute mark, things hit a high gear.
It does. I would say it kicks it into gear a little sooner.
Okay.
Because it basically tells the story by the days in the week. So it starts on Monday and ends on Sunday.
Oh, okay.
And by the time you get to, I don't know, Wednesday night, like, you're just like, okay, something's not right.
Not right here. Okay.
Like, you could maybe put it off as tragedy, or, oh, there are wolves out because they live on a farm, or there's something making those noises, but it's very unsettling. I would give it a 4.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I would give it a 4. Initially, I was thinking 3.5. But I think a lot of that may have had to do, and my girlfriend's no stranger to horror. She just rewatched Hereditary by herself, she couldn't remember if she saw it. And then she got like an hour in and she's like, oh, I have seen this. So she doesn't get bothered, but holding her hand during some of those scenes, whether it be like the gore or the tension, it's just like, and we were sharing a blanket and it was just like my hand.
So, I like my hand back, please.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that's how I can kind of gauge reaction to, like, because I know I don't react that well to, like, shock.
Right, yeah.
Even if it's well done. But when I'm with somebody who does, it makes it even more, like, of an experience.
Experience and with entertaining. Them, yeah.
But, yeah, like I said, the two of us both came out saying, like, early on it felt really long, but then when you think about it, you're like, actually that was only the first like 20 minutes, but it just takes its time.
Okay.
But unlike Hereditary, once it gets going after like that 20 to 30 minutes, it's going.
Okay. All right, just want to make sure, because like I said, I feel so terrible.
And I want to say it's probably coming to VOD first. And then Shudder later, because Shudder bought the rights.
Yes, I saw that Shudder
like bought IFC the rights for it. It's like IFC and Shudder, I think.
Yes, and I was going to say, it's supposed to be set, it looks like, this upcoming weekend on the 6th. It looks like it's set for November 6th, so...
Could be like a limited theatrical VOD release on the 6th.
Okay, and there's no idea how much it would cost to rent this movie or anything like that. No.
I would guess, I don't know. Honestly, I would say if it's two people, I would say it's definitely worth $15.
Okay.
Because, I mean, our two tickets were like $25, and okay, I still thought that was worth it for the theatrical experience with the sound and everything. But if you're going to watch it at home with at least a decent sound system, I would say it's worth like $10, $15.
Okay. And I was going to say, you watched it at Alamo. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, I'm going to have to get this a shot.
And it was kind of cool not knowing what it was.
Oh, yeah, because you said it was a mystery screening. Yeah. So that's the only
thing. We really didn't know until the Don't Talk PSA started, and it was the brother from the movie, although I couldn't recognize him in the PSA, but he's like on like a handy cam, and he's like, she told us not to come. And he's like, told you not to come, told you. And then it's like, don't talk.
Okay. So I'm probably going to sit there and wait for it on the 6th. I don't think that there's any screenings for it in the Alamo. Well, they probably will have some this upcoming weekend, probably. But that's probably much it. Okay. All right, cool. And I feel like that's really
about it.
Yeah, this is a very short episode. The only thing is like this past weekend, I've watched eight of the 11 Halloween films, and
yeah, you go back and rewatch some of those. Like, to be honest, H2O has always been kind of like a joy for me to watch.
It's always the better out of all the sequels.
But then rewatching Resurrection for the, because when I saw Resurrection for the first time, I want to say I was a junior or senior in high school, okay. And to me it was kind of stupid. But then going back and rewatching it with my girlfriend last weekend, I was like, yeah, it's kind of fun.
See,
like, it's stupid, but it is kind of fun.
But my thing is with Halloween Resurrection, it's like how I feel about Halloween 2. It's like it's unnecessary, but the kills are what keeps you going, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what I loved about, not loved, that's the only thing I really liked about Halloween Resurrection. Again, now I'm realizing after we talked about it, which I wish we would, when Halloween Kills comes out, we got to redo our list. But
Fantastic Fest 2021.
Yes, Halloween I can't wait. I really enjoy H2O, and now my second favorite Halloween movie is still Halloween 2018. Still holds up. It's still really good. There's one thing that I still hate about it, and it's the doctor. But other than that, I still enjoyed it. So.
New Loomis.
It was a miss. That was the worst. That was the worst part of the movie.
Yep.
But yeah, that's really all we did this weekend. I feel like one day we're gonna have to like do a marathon, but like revisit and rank all of the Halloween movies.
Yep. Do that, or maybe we need to like revisit and rank holiday movies in general.
Yeah.
Now that we're moving into November, December. You know, like I can't remember the last time I watched like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Some of the lesser known ones.
Like I watched Home Alone and Christmas Vacation every holiday.
Right.
But some of those other ones, I'm like,
they fall to the waste. Right. They fall to waste. So like I was thinking about that. One of my favorite Christmas movies growing up was Scrooge with Bill Murray. Again, we're talking about Bill Murray. And I haven't watched that in like 10 years. And then I'm realizing, wow, I haven't seen Groundhog Day since I was in middle school.
Yeah.
Wow. I need to, and to your point, we have to, that's a great idea we should do later down the line, is we should be able to do that. Because I'm so surprised. There's not that many, there are many holiday movies, but I haven't got to watch them in years. So yes, we definitely would have to do that one day.
Cool.
But, other than that, yeah, that's pretty much it for this episode. Is there anything else you want to talk about, Johnny, before we go?
No, that's it.
All right. Well, where can the kids find you, Johnny?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Johnny the Wonder, and on Letterboxd with my movie reviews and lists and rankings at Johnny Boy Wonder. And what about you?
You guys can find me on Instagram and Twitter at King Julian Owens. Again, movie coming. I will do it. 2021 is when I will start releasing my letterbox so you can see my reviews. So hold off until 2021. You'll see those then. But other than that, guys, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you guys next time.
Later.